Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are about to have one of our Urbanite Radio story conversations. There is a piece in this month's Urbanite called Chasing a Goal. Baltimore Public Schools have a rich history of lacrosse, but the game all but dried up several decades ago by Jeff Seidel. We've done stories on lacrosse many times in the past here on the show. My good friend Miles Henderson, who is a surgeon, was on Morgan State University's first team, an incredible team, and his son, who is a nationally ranked lacrosse player who played at Hopkins. We're on the show talking about blacks and lacrosse and how it was built here at Morgan with an old friend of mine who was coach, Chip Silverman, who's passed away. Of course, probably one of the greatest lacrosse players of all time was Jim Brown, who of course went on to football fame, but was one of the great lacrosse players in the history of the sport. So people always think of lacrosse as this game that's only for white boys and girls, but that's not the case. And so we're here to talk about that and more. Joining us in studio, Lloyd Carter, who is president and founder of Black Slacks, also the lacrosse coach at Northwestern High School, and who played here on the last lacrosse team at Morgan State University. Good to meet you, man. Pleasure.
Thank you for inviting us and having us here.
Good to have you here. And Doug Gans is with us, who, of course, is the Attorney General for the state of Maryland, but is founder of the Charm City Youth Lacrosse League. So he's not here to talk politics or legal issues of the state, but something else. His real passion.
It's much better. Much better. We love it. Charm City's been great. We're in our fourth year. We have about 300 inner-city kids between 5 and 12 years old every Saturday at Carroll Park, and it's been a huge, huge success in very many ways.
So, and lacrosse is still your passion. Lacrosse is still your passion. We talked before we went on the air that you're still playing.
I still play. I've been playing since I was 13. I played at Yale for 4 years. I played a little bit pro, and I've been playing club lacrosse since then. And it's a passion, and I coach my own sons. They're now 17 and 15, and if I might, I'll just sort of tell you where we started this program.
Sure.
It was coaching my kids, and we'd come up to Baltimore, and there's a tournament called Lac Splash. And there's 7,000 kids in Lac Splash tournament every year in Baltimore County. It's the biggest tournament on the East Coast. And you have a lot of time in the heat, and you have time to sit around and think about it. It occurred to me there are about 5 African-American kids in this tournament, one on this team, one on that team. And it occurred to me that every hamlet and town and county around Baltimore City had a team. I'm looking at the shirts, Catonsville, Cockeysville, Lutherville, Towson. Nothing for Baltimore. Yet Baltimore is the mecca of lacrosse in the world. It's where the United States Lacrosse Association is located. It's where the Hall of Fame is. Obviously, we have Hopkins, Towson, UMBC, and then Maryland and Navy are nearby. So we decided to start this program up, and there are a number of inner city programs throughout the country, and each one is different. But I got to tell you, the inspiration was the 10 Bears team at Morgan State. And it's and Miles Harrison, who you mentioned at the top of the show, is actually the president of my board of Charm City Lacrosse. And we have a number of players, very well-known people here. Stuart Sims is on the board. David Cordish is on the board. A number of people that played lacrosse in the Baltimore area.
Stu played football.
He was
a fullback at Gilman.
Gilman, then Dartmouth. But he's been wonderful with this program. We have Larry Quinn, played goalie at Hopkins, is on our board. And we have a number of – it's a very diverse board and really excited about this program that we've been able to take to the next level. But you also – the only other thing I'll say is that at the top of the show, you talked about a white boy thing. And it's exactly the biggest issue we have.
That's right.
Because it's getting the kids over the hurdle of thinking that this is a white boy sport, that this is something you can do, you can excel, you can get out of the underserved area you're in and go to one of these elite private schools and then go on to Harvard or Yale and then run a bank and be rich and successful and soft because of lacrosse.
Well, just enjoy lacrosse and go to college and get a degree.
Done.
So Lloyd, yes, Carter, sir. It's good to meet you and welcome to the studios here.
Thank you.
You're no stranger to Morgan's campus.
No, I spent several years here. Several years. Well, anyway. I actually started playing lacrosse at Edmondson High School. And while at Edmondson High School, I was approached to play at Morgan. I was approached to play after a game at Northwestern High School in my senior year. It came out in 1976 by the coach Sheldon Freed. He had actually come to see two other players, and I had a pretty good game. I scored like 3 goals, 2 assists, and he actually came on the bus and offered me the opportunity to come to Morgan. I'd already been accepted to go to George Washington, and I told my parents I wanted to go to Morgan. They looked at me like I was crazy, but my two best friends, Calvin Clay and Mike McBride, were going, and they decided to let me go. And the rest is history. And I played here for 3 years. I played on the last team. 1981 was the team that beat Villanova, Georgetown, and our biggest win was against Notre Dame, actually here on Morgan's campus. And so after that program ended, you know, I felt there was a void that needed to be filled. And after a period of time, I started coaching high school at Northwestern High School. And the story that evolved Black Lax was I had one of the best players, I think, to come out of Baltimore and even out of the state of Maryland. His name was Sean Medlin. And Sean Medlin led the state in scoring for like 2 years. But they always said, well, you know, the city teams don't play anybody. But he had the opportunity to go to the state all-star game. And he actually played in the same state all-star game that Miles' son played in. But Sean Medlin ended up being the most valuable player of the all-star game. But at the end of that game, he had nowhere to go. He had no college offers. And I was just heartbroken because I knew by far he was one of the best players.
And he was
out.
He was a student where?
He was at Northwestern High School.
Right.
And so myself, my partner, Anthony Ryan, we call him Merck, and some other people, Donnie Brown, Gene White, people that played at Morgan, we started this organization called Black Slacks. And the main focus of Black Slacks is to improve the opportunities for African Americans in Baltimore to play lacrosse year-round. We have a summer program. We have a winter program. We started a senior all-star game. As a matter of fact, I'm supposed to coach tonight. We're playing at Mervo. This is the
How do you define event. Senior?
Senior high school.
A senior high school. I was meant like
right.
Older guys.
No, older guys. That's a good one.
Right, no. Senior high school.
Yeah, but it's senior high school. So what we wanted to do is at the end of the season – they had nowhere to go. They would turn their sticks in, and that would be it for the next year. And we said, well, they need to get some recognition. And so this is, again, our ninth year. And the coaches are normally the people who do well throughout the regular season. So this year, I'll brag, we won the city championship at Northwestern. And we played myself and Coach John Robinson from Douglas. We're coaching the West. Anthony Merck Ryan from City, and Ray Hawkins from Poly are coaching the East. And it's always
City and Poly working together, huh?
Yeah, you got to see that. Somebody need to come take a picture of that one. Kumbaya moment. But definitely, it's the talent and it's well-attended. You know, families come out. And it's been the high point of the high school lacrosse season. Seniors look forward to getting into it every year.
I didn't even know that existed.
Yes. So that was a plug. A shameless plug, but it was
all right.
A plug. Yes.
I had no idea, though.
Well, a lot of people don't. You know, the reality is there's been lacrosse for some time. We talked about the 10 Bears program. That ran out of funding, unfortunately. Now, there is club lacrosse here at Morgan State now. And they've had it in the high schools in the city, but none of the middle schools and obviously none of the younger kids that we mentioned. What the whole hope is that our program, Charm City, feeds into the new middle school program that actually Superintendent Bielfeld has been working with a number of people, including Lori and others, to build up the middle schools and then feed into the high schools. So the problem's always been when these kids show up at the high school in Baltimore, Poly, or City, wherever it is, they've never played. Now, they might be a great athlete, but they're getting a stick for the first time in ninth grade. The kids at Gilman and Boys Latin and St. Paul's have been playing since third grade. And so it's hard to catch
right.
up. So we're trying to bridge that. So these kids start at 5, 6 years old. And then you know, talking about the guy had nowhere to go in college. I mean, that's really one of the missions here. These kids, you know, when my son plays his 11th grade, when he goes on against some of these schools, every kid on that field is already committed, including 10th graders, to college. And that's Maryland is where the colleges come to get players to play lacrosse at the college level.
And that's not happening at Northwestern and other places
well,
like that?
Yeah, actually, that's one of the a very important aspect that needs.
I'm sorry? Do we have somebody on line one?
This is Miles Harrison.
Hey, Miles, how are you?
Hey, Mark, how you been, buddy?
Good, man. Welcome. I'm so happy you could join us.
Not a problem.
Dr. Miles Harrison, before let me just interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
Dr.
What's
Miles
up,
Harrison Doc? Is a surgeon, a very renowned surgeon in the city of Baltimore, who was part of the 10 Bears book that he wrote with Chip Silverman about The original Morgan lacrosse team, that where he was a player and a star, his son of the same name, a star at Hopkins, playing lacrosse. And I realized we were doing the show tonight and left him a message in the cell and called his office and said, Miles, if you got a minute, call in so you can be part of the show because you're one of the storied legends of lacrosse in this town.
He is, and rightfully so. He's very proud of Kyle, who was the best player in the world his senior year in college. And Miles is the president, as I mentioned earlier, of Charm City Lacrosse. And not only is he president, but he's active. I mean, Miles was there last weekend, just come and watch the kids and talks to the kids and gives them a little lift each week. And some, you know, it's he's just a wonderful man and been wonderful for the sport of lacrosse here in Baltimore.
Thank you. Can I say hi to Doug?
Hi, Miles.
Hi, Doug. How you doing, buddy?
Good.
So before I forget, I'm sorry, I apologize, Lloyd. You were in the middle of a thought when we said hello to Miles.
Oh, yeah. One of the things when we talk about college, since 1981, there has been no historical black college or university that has had a lacrosse program. When we started Black Slacks, our goal was to get Morgan's team up and running. In 2005, we were successful in getting a club level team back at Morgan, and they've been playing since 2005. Last year, Black Slacks also worked with U.S. Lacrosse in establishing a club level team at Hampton University. This year being their first season, inaugural season. And so we want to continue to do that. And the reason why that's important is, as Mr. Gansler said, in the 10th, 11th grade at a lot of the schools that are non-city schools, the colleges are coming and looking at these players and already scouting them to come. But they, for some reason, they shy away from Baltimore City. And what we realize is that if African Americans have institutions that they can come to, like I had Morgan to come to. I knew I was going to Morgan, so that made me a better player. That made me go out and shoot 100 shots and run 3 miles in the morning because I knew if I was good enough, I would be able to go to Morgan. The problem we find now is a lot of African Americans, and just like you said earlier, you go to teams, you see one or two. You don't see an entire team of African-Americans. Prime example, this weekend in Foxborough, they have the championship games. We have three members. One, my son, Lance Carter, who's playing for Salisbury, who's going to be playing for a championship. Another gentleman, Ahmad Simmons from City College, who's going to be playing at Limestone, and Jamar Pete, or Petey, who also played at Walbrook for Coach Holcomb. He's going to be playing for Division II championship. So when you look at it, when we get the opportunity, we excel. It's just that we only one or two or three players as opposed to a mass of people. And when we talk about the stepping stone, now that we have Charm City, I mean, that's one of the things we always said, to be able to have them start at the elementary school, graduate to the middle school, come to the high school, and eventually in college.
So, and Miles, I bring you back in here, and I think this is, and we got people calling in. Kenneth and Jay, hold on, we're going to come back to your calls. Kenneth, who played at Southwestern, Jay, who has a comment on lacrosse of black colleges. We want to get you both in the conversation here at 410-319-8888. But, Miles, I'm just curious. I mean, you know, when we did a show years back on the 10 Bears and talked about lacrosse and the storied team that was here at Morgan when you played on that team, but going beyond that, what we're talking about today, I mean, why is it, from your perspective, important? I mean, people who love lacrosse love their game, right? So they want to see it played. They love playing it, love watching it, and the rest, because it's an incredible game for it's probably one of the toughest games to play, I think, that any person can play is lacrosse, maybe outside of rugby.
and that's a toughie, let me tell you.
Yes, it is. I played rugby in college.
Can I say hi also to Coach Carter? Lloyd, how you doing, buddy?
I'm fine. Doc, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Yeah, Mark, understand that whenever you can have a legacy with anything, that is one generation performing and then the subsequent offspring of that generation performing in the same arena, be it lacrosse, be it on the stage, be it in politics, there's always a cachet that goes with it. There's always a feeling that second generation is going to take it to the next level. And what Lloyd just said to you is our offspring are taking it to the level that we dreamed of. I always dreamed of playing in a national championship game, knowing full well that I would never do that. But look at what's happened to our offspring. They are doing that. So establishing the legacy, establishing the passing on of thought, the passing on of skills is a very important process, and that translates into academics and all the other kinds of things to produce a good citizen. You're well aware that this is a game, there's a spiritual component that I've not experienced with any of the other sports that I've played. Football, swimming, none of the other sports that I did in an organized fashion have the same kind of spiritual connection to the sport, and that has to do with what we understand as the Native Americans' inception of the sport, and it was a part of their culture. It was a rite of passage. It was what they did as a part of their culture, and that's why people continue to gravitate, and once they do, they stay there.
Let me open the phones and get folks back in the conversation from around the area at 410-319-8888. And we're having one of our Urbanite radio conversations. It was an article about lacrosse and black lacrosse in Baltimore City. Two of the folks in that article, Lloyd Carter, who graduated from Morgan State University, played here. President and founder of Black Slacks is also the coach at Northwestern. He's in studio. Doug Ganser, who founded the Charm City Youth Lacrosse League, is with us. He, of course, is also Attorney General of the State of Maryland and a lacrosse player in high school and in college and still playing. We'll see how long that lasts, but he's still playing.
Until my first heart attack, then I'm done.
Dr. Miles, then he'll go to Dr. Miles Harrison, who joins us by phone, who are one of the original 10 Bears, who played here at Morgan State University as one of our leading surgeons in the city of Baltimore at Maryland General Hospital. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Kenneth in Pikesville, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, thank you for letting me come in. I'm a lacrosse lover. I went to Southwestern High School, played under Coach George Kipp. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Coach Kipp.
I am.
But at Southwestern High School, we only had a varsity team. So 10th graders that came in went straight to varsity and honed their skills. By the time they got to be seniors, these guys were super fantastic. I represented our school as the unsung hero for that particular school. Lost out to a guy from Poly, of course, because this guy was phenomenal. His name escapes me. But there wasn't a lot of aggressive recruiting back then. With reference to lacrosse, particularly from the black schools. So I commend you guys on what you're doing right now, because bringing the focus to African-Americans who are playing lacrosse is just another avenue to get us to play lacrosse and get in there and get scholarships and get education. So kudos to you guys.
Ken, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ken. Let me just this is Doug Gansler. I just wanted to say, it's actually not only for college but high school. One of our missions at Charm City is to get some of these kids into these elite schools. The way we set ourselves up is we have corporate sponsors for all our teams. We're 501c3. And they're all available on our website, Charm City Youth Lacs. But then we have the schools, Gilman, St. Paul's, McDonough, Boys Latin, Calvert Hall, Baltimore Friends, Landon from Bethesda, and Cristo Rey. The coaches of those schools come to Charm City every week, and they bring four or five of their high school players. So these kids are getting the best coaching in the world, not from the coaches at the Gilmans and St. Paul's and McDonough's, but they're also bringing the high school kids. And I'll tell you, the interaction between the high school kids and the players in Charm City is great to watch, and the relationships that get developed over the season. I have a 15-year-old son. He's never missed one of these. Gets up early. He won't get up for anything. He pops out of bed, and they come up, and it's just been a wonderful thing. So, and we're able to now identify some of these kids that we've been working with the BEST program here in Baltimore to start to get them into some of these schools, and that's also one of the missions. So it's not only college, but it's also the high school.
Well, I wanted to, starting with Miles and go over to Lloyd, what Kenneth was saying, I was thinking about what you think the connection is then between lacrosse and academics, lacrosse and feeling that you can take life somewhere else. It might sound kind of specious, but maybe it's, I don't think it is. I mean, I think that, because it is. I mean, lacrosse is a Maryland game, but in terms of, and it's of course, an Iroquois game, but it's the Maryland game in terms of the country right now.
Well, people in Long Island might take issue with that.
They might, but that's okay.
No,
they're
wrong.
But your point's well taken.
But they're wrong, Miles.
But the question is, here, as we said at the top of the hour, Miles, that lacrosse is seen as a game for upper-class white people.
Mm-hmm.
And the psychology of that, when we're talking about taking the game literally to the streets.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think what you have is something that's certainly an equal opportunity participation, but the exposure to this particular sport had to do with the schools that were participating, and many of the public schools did not have those kinds of programs, and the private schools did. So the perception that this was a something that was done by people who were financially well-heeled in private situations arose in this city because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we're trying to do, and Lloyd and Chief Lloyd Carter and Donnie, I'm blocking Donnie's last name right now.
Donnie Brown
have finally shown that this really doesn't have a color. It's a sport that employs many of the skill sets that you need in other sports, the footwork of basketball, the running of soccer, the hitting of football, the hand-eye coordination of football and some of the other racket sports. And clearly, once you expose African-American populations and all other populations, Asians and the like, to a sport that they've not been familiar with, we indeed gravitate to it like everyone else. So the misconception came early on with the visibility of the game being played at private schools and elite clubs. But indeed, once you get a chance, and certainly the Charm City Lacrosse League is an example of that, to expose other ethnic groups to this, the same kind of bonding goes on. And this has to be duplicated over and over and over again.
Lloyd, what's your take? Lloyd Carter.
Well, I look at it from my perspective. I grew up in Edmondson Village, and Edmondson High School has probably historically been one of the hotbeds of lacrosse in the African-American community. When they started Morgan's team, when Doc started, you know, he had people from different city schools. I think he went to Forest Park, but the majority of the real ball players came from Edmondson. That's reality. Uh-huh. So what happened over a period of time, growing up in Edmondson Village, the sport of lacrosse was known. It wasn't as popular as basketball or football, but we knew about it. And my older brother, Bennett, he actually had a wooden stick, and I used to be able to pick up the ball and scoop the ball. So by the time I got to high school, I could scoop the ball very well. And if you know anything about lacrosse, controlling the ball is ultimate in any game. Whoever controls the ball wins the game. So I made varsity because I could scoop the ball. Couldn't catch and throw that well, but eventually
In the beginning. Right.
But one of the things I think when it comes to the academic aspect, what lacrosse does is it's a sport that you can teach yourself to be better. All you need is a stick, a ball, and a wall, and you can make yourself better if you work at it over and over and over again. And I see it a lot, especially in high school. We have people that'll come out for lacrosse in the 12th grade year, never played before. And by the end of that year, by the end of that season, 3 months, they can catch, they can throw, they can run with the ball. And you see the massive development. I mean, it's exponential, the skill level development. And what that does is show them that if I really apply myself to whatever I want to do, I can become good at it. And that's what I've seen that over and over in the last 12 years that I've coached in City High School.
I have a bunch of other questions for the three of you, but let me go to the phones here. Folks calling in at 410-319-8888 as we talk about lacrosse. Black Slax and the Charm City Youth Lacrosse League, which we're going to get into much more about what those things do, where they play, and a little bit about the game itself for those of you who never played the game. 410-319-8888. Jay in Middle River, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening. Let me first say I'm a Morgan alum, so I'm really, really appreciative to Dr. Harrison and Coach Carter for what they did in building Morgan's legacy through lacrosse. So thank you guys for that.
Thank you, sir. Thank
the
you.
The question that I have for you is, it seems like sports like lacrosse, baseball, hockey in some areas, it's an economic decision for a lot of the kids because they can't afford the right equipment to play. And then when you get to the college level, there's issues with Title IX. So do you think that in terms of introducing the sport at a young age in minority communities, that it's incumbent on HBCUs to really, their players who are forming these club teams and these club leagues, to go into the communities and not only instruct children and be mentors for children in the sport, but to help with the fundraising, because the teams are already fundraising themselves so they can be able to travel and participate in the leagues. And, again, I thank you all for taking my call.
It's a great question, Jay.
Answer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and let me say this. That's exactly why a lot of the schools don't have it, because lacrosse is very expensive. You know, they put out a lot of money for football. The next most expensive sport in terms of equipment would be lacrosse. Obviously, hockey requires a rink, and that's a different issue. But and then you mentioned the Title IX program that's happening in the college level. Lacrosse is the fastest growing sport by far in the United States. It's spread everywhere, and there's articles about it and so forth. The one place that we were concerned with that it was going to get left behind were the cities, and in particular, obviously, Baltimore. And we've talked a little bit about the importance of lacrosse. You can't forget, I mean, while it'd be great to have lacrosse at Topeka, Kansas, or in L.A. or someplace like that, we're in Baltimore. This is where lacrosse, you know, this is where people come for the players and so forth. So, you know, if we give an equal opportunity to kids in Baltimore, they'll be able to transcend the Title IX limitations and be able to play in some of the colleges down the road. But the money piece is very important. We the way we do it is we are 501c3 and we get the corporate sponsors. So we charge $7,500 a team. And Cordish and DLA Piper and Comcast and Verizon and other companies have stepped up, and they have a team, and that's how we're able to pay. Lax World has been great in terms of giving us at-cost equipment for these kids, but it's essential because it is a very, very expensive sport. But I think we're able – being in Baltimore, you know, Mark said, for those of you who don't know lacrosse, I haven't met the person in Baltimore that doesn't either play lacrosse, their kids play lacrosse, their neighbors play lacrosse, or know about lacrosse. So that's why it's actually been quite easy for us to get the interest level up in Charm City lacrosse in particular.
Go ahead, Miles, you're about to say something?
Yeah, well, Doug just told you about some of the methods of getting equipment to kids who don't have the funds to do that. U.S. Lacrosse, which is the governing body of lacrosse for the United States, very similar to the other U.S. hockey and so forth and so on, has programs for equipment funding grants. And so that's another method that we get equipment to underserved populations to play the game. You got to have settings. You obviously cannot just dole equipment out to individual kids. You certainly have to have settings in which there's coaching, refereeing, and instruction in the game. And that's a cognitive expense that we sometimes don't think about. Certainly the tangible stick, ball, pads, goals, and seals are things that cost and are a deterrent to having that happen, quote, in the hood. But we also need people who know the game, are able to referee the game, and teach the game appropriately. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to build a shaky foundation. I guess you'd much rather have some foundation rather than none at all. But there's that cognitive expense, too, that comes to it. And so all of these are deterrents, and all the organizations like Black Lax, like U.S. Lacrosse, and I happen to be on the foundation board, U.S. Lacrosse Foundation Board, which is the fundraising arm, all are involved in helping to fund the sport, both physically and cognitively, in underserved populations.
So now Michael Millersville, hold on, we're going to come to your call in just a second. So where's the game being played? Like, where do you, outside of high school, Lloyd Carter,
where are you
playing the game?
What we do after the regular season is over, like I said, tonight is the culmination,
team, right?
Right. Culmination of the high school season with the All-Star game. And then in 2 weeks, we'll start what we call our run-and-gun summer league. What we tend to do every year, and this is our eighth year, we have it in two locations, a West Side location. This year it'll be at Pimlico Middle School, and then an East Side location will be at the 33rd Street Field, the YMCA location. Mm. We do that twice a week, Monday and Wednesdays, and we have a eighth grade to unlimited age group. So we mainly focus on high school and college level players. And what we do is we do instructional, we do drills, we work on the fundamental skills, and then we create an intramural league. And at the end of each practice, we have competition games. And we identify the best players, and we take the best players, create a travel team, and we play maybe two or three tournaments in the summer. We also have a club-level team. These are some of the guys I had mentioned before that play college level or who have played college level. And we create a team, and we compete in the Howard County League, which is a very competitive league with D1, D2, and Division III college players. And each year we've always done very well as far as competition, normally going to the Final Four. One year we went to the finals. We still got to win the championship. Maybe it'll be this year. But and so that's what we do primarily in the summertime. What we do in the wintertime, we've gone into our fifth year. We get a indoor soccer arena, Myers Pavilion, which is in Brooklyn. And we do on Sundays, we run a similar 7-on-7 scrimmage type game or season where we have various players, high school, college players who come home on the break. And we run that for about 8 weeks. And so that's basically how our programs coincide.
Now, the program for Charm City Youth, these are young kids, right?
These are young kids, 5 to 12-year-olds. We play on Saturday mornings from 9 to 10:30 at Carroll Park. We just had our last group meeting last weekend. We have we have an African-American male come and speak to the kids, inspirational talk each week. We have a college day where one of the universities, last year with the University of Maryland, their whole team came. This year, UMBC, their whole team came. We then identify all-star teams, and we actually sent the first all-African-American team to that LAC Splash tournament I was talking about last season. This year, we have a game Friday night. We're going to have a tournament with the Mount Washington Lacrosse Club, the old Mount Washington Lacrosse Club. Then we're going to be in the LAC Max and the LAC Splash tournament. You talked about funding. We don't want the kids to come in and be embarrassed from some of them don't have the means to have bright and shiny uniforms or brand-new cleats. Under Armour sponsors our all-star teams, so they look good. We play well. We also play a game at halftime of the Bayhawks game. We play a similar program in D.C. called Winners Lacrosse. Our kids play against their kids and get to have the experience of being a pro game. So, like I said, this is our fourth season. We're up to 300 kids, and we added girls this year. We have about 25, 30 girls.
Good.
Yeah, which is a great component of it, and we're looking to grow that part of the program as well.
Let me go back to the phones here and come back to Miles Harrison as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Michael in Millersville, you're on the air.
All right, thank you. I've been listening to, you know, your conversation and everything. You know, and I think I've been in Maryland for over 30 years, but I heard somebody mention, you talk about Long Island. I'm from Syracuse, New York, which is the Iroquois Nation.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, I mean, you know, as far as lacrosse is concerned, I mean, and Syracuse University is concerned, I mean, that's a hotbed of lacrosse. I think that if people knew a lot more of the history of who played lacrosse, Jim Brown, for an example,
right,
who was an All-American in lacrosse. Not just, I mean, people think of Jim Brown, they think of football, but he was an All-American in lacrosse.
Yeah, I did a whole chapter on that in my book. He's two-time All-American. He was actually a two-time All-American out of Syracuse.
Exactly.
In 59.
Well, lacrosse.
Right.
So, I mean,
we talked about that at the top of the show, yeah.
Well, I didn't hear that part, and I apologize.
That's all right.
I wanted
That's
to
okay.
mention that because I think that if a lot of, you know, inner-city youths were familiar with the history of who actually played lacrosse, you know, if a young kid heard that, hey, Jim Brown played lacrosse, he was not only an All-American in football, but in lacrosse. And I beg to differ with the Long Island mention because, like I said, where I'm from, Syracuse, that is lacrosse. That's Iroquois Nation in upstate New York.
Your comment is a very, very pertinent comment. Mine was rather a flippant comment when they said we were talking about Maryland being the place where lacrosse is played, and my comment
right.
was simply that people in Long Island would take issue because a lot of lacrosse is played there, too. I can name three other places. Certainly Syracuse is one, and your comment is absolutely appropriate.
But it's also I'll use that as sort of where we are now, where we were then. When I'm almost 50 years old. When I was growing up, the upstate New York, Long Island, and Maryland were the only places practically it was even played, let alone the hotbeds. Now it's played in Utah, Texas, California, everywhere. University of Denver was on TV the other day. The top five players are from Canada.
North Carolina.
Yeah, and it's everywhere.
It's
and
exploding.
So
it's absolutely exploding.
Exploding, but the places it had not exploded was in the inner cities and the underserved populations, and that's why what Black Slacks is doing and Charm City here and then Metro La Crosse up in Boston and some of the areas around the country, it's an amazing it provides opportunity for everybody to be able to excel in the sport and then go on and play in college. And by the time these kids, and there's an indoor pro league now and an outdoor pro league now, by the time these kids that are playing now get to that age, there's the pro lacrosse is going to be as big as some of these other sports.
The fact that you mentioned pro lacrosse is funny because I mentioned my son earlier, Lance Carter. He plays for Salisbury, and his teammate, Sam Bradman, who's an African-American, who actually came and played with some of my players during the winter. He was drafted. He's actually going to pro league. And so you talk about Chaz Woodson, obviously Kyle Harrison. You got to talk about those guys that when given the opportunity, just like Mr. Gansler said, when given the opportunity, they will excel to the next level. When you talk about All-Americans, I played with a three-time All-American at Morgan State. His name was Joe Folks. And Joe Folks was a supreme athlete, but he fell in love with the game of lacrosse. And so the gentleman is very right about, you know, exposing people to the knowledge of blacks do play lacrosse. They did the Morgan Lacrosse Story, which is a documentary that was done.
Right.
And it was excellent. It was very well done, very well put together. Chip was involved in it prior to him dying or passing away. And it really explains our involvement in the sport of lacrosse. And I think anybody who's really interested in seeing some of the history of African-Americans in lacrosse should take the opportunity to look at that documentary.
And Miles, before we run out of time, I want you to kind of play off of what Lloyd was just saying, just about the Morgan 10 Bears. I know that that's you as the class of 75, the 75 Morgan Bears, I mean, and the Kurt Anderson was on that team, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Mark, I didn't hear you last time.
I said Kurt Anderson was on that team, if I remember correctly.
Kurt Anderson, was on the 73 team.
73 team.
I don't think he was still there in 75. And contrary to popular belief, Mark, nor was I. After playing the club year in 69 and playing 69-70 and the first varsity year, 70-71, I then graduated and went on to Penn's Med School. So I played in the North-South All-Star game that year. And what that did was it blipped us on the national radar screen. So we got a guy from a place called Morgan on this national All-Star team. Where are they and who are they? And then from that point on, from 72 through 75, they had winning seasons culminating in that victory against Washington and Lee, which is the end point of the book that Chip and I wrote. And the bottom line of that, when we talk about 10 Bears, we're not talking about the first 10 starters and the guys that were there with me. It is euphemistically all the players who played at Morgan in that entire 10-year period of the program.
And 10 players played at a time.
Right,
10 players. There are a whole lot of reasons for the 10 there. And interestingly enough, there's another double entendre. 10 Bears was a Native American chief from the 1600s, that certainly a lacrosse player because it was indeed a Native American sport. So there's that triple entendre, if you will, of 10 Bears. So there you have it.
And I'm just going back to Lloyd's point earlier. I mean, this, you know, it's almost a novelty and a historical blip, as I think was the 10 Bears program. It was a wonderful thing. And Dr. Harrison mentioned the game against Washington Lee where the 10 Bears went down. They were number one or number two in the country. They went to the South. They were racial epithets were being tossed at the team, and they won. Morgan State won. And, you know, what we want to try and do through these programs, Charm City Youth, LACS, and others, is to get it so it's not a novelty. So we get it at the HBCU. So we get it, you know, more African-American players have the opportunity to excel in lacrosse and then excel in life afterward. And that's, I think, one of the big missions of this.
Yeah. May I reinforce something that Coach Carter, I like to call him Chief Carter rather than Coach Carter, mentioned. And that was the documentary. It was done in 2006. Ironically aired 3 days after Coach Chip Silverman died, so he never got to see the finished product, but we were all involved in it with interviews, so forth and so on. That gives you the entire background of not only the Morgan program, but it gives you a historical perspective on lacrosse, talking about the Native Americans, talking about where these hotbeds are that we've talked about, talking about how lacrosse was integrated into school programs and why we were not, we meaning African Americans, were not necessarily a part of that because there were schools where we were not matriculating, where we were not attending. So the point I'm making is it shows so many facets of the game that we're talking about. It is available through PBS, whatever your PBS carrier is in your city. It started off at $12. I'm sure it's down to $4 or $5 now. I get no part of this. This is not a commercial, but it is an effective way, as Coach Carter said, for you to see all of the aspects that we've been talking about. And I think it's around $4 now, and it's 58 minutes long. And I suggest it for anyone who truly is interested. Both the caller, Ken, and Captain Carter are exactly right. That's something that will give you a total perspective on lacrosse.
Gentlemen, we are out of time, but this has been a really great segment for the show. I appreciate Miles, Dr. Miles Harrison, surgeon, first more.
Good to the title with Miles.
Thank you so much, Miles, for coming in the last minute. Great to have you here.
Thank you. My pleasure. Guys, take care.
Take care.
Lloyd Carter, president and founder of Black Flax, on the last. Yeah, we had Miles from the first team at Morgan State University and Lloyd Carter from the last lacrosse team here at Morgan State University. Yes. Maybe there'll be another one in his future with any luck.
Yes, sir.
No, there is a club
I'll
team.
Coach it.
And you have to go coach now.
Right.
Yes,
but there is a club team at Morgan State right
team
now.
Right.
Yeah.
And Doug Ganser, Attorney General and founder of the Charm City Youth Lacrosse League. Thank you all for being here for this Urbanite Radio story. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for having us. This is wonderful.
This is good.
Thank you.
Folks, we make a very brief break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Dan Morheim, who's not just a Maryland State Delegate and a physician, but has written this book, The Better End, Surviving and Dying on Your Terms in Today's Modern Medical World. So stay with us. We'll be right back